Our next presenter is Scott Peterson. I personally became acquainted with Scott 11 years ago when my husband passed away, and I needed somebody to help me with money because I just didn't pay any attention to money, and I didn't get it, and I didn't want to get it. And I had a good friend who knew Scott, and so I called him up, and he came and sat in my home and walked me through some of the steps that I didn't want to take. He is the founder and principal investment advisor of Peterson Wealth Advisors, and since graduating from Brigham Young University in 1986, Scott has specialized in managing money for retirees and helping retirees make prudent financial decisions in their various stages of retirement. But he also helps sad widows that call on him. Scott has broken ground in the retirement planning industry as a pioneer in retirement income planning. He is the architect of the Perennial Income Model, a planning tool that helps retirees manage their investments throughout retirement. As the author of Maximizing Your Retirement Income, Scott is often invited to speak about financial issues regarding retirement, and he is a regular presenter at BYU Education Week. Thanks to his three decades of research and his collaborative approach with legal and tax professionals in the managing of clients' finances during retirement, he has positioned himself to offer unique insights on the issues facing today's retirees. During his time off, Scott enjoys spending time with his wife, Tracy, and their five children. He also enjoys serving in his community in various civic and religious endeavors. He is an avid sports fan and loves the outdoors. When he's not in the office, you can find him boating in the summer or skiing in the winter with his family. Scott Peterson.
Thanks, Ann. I didn't know you were going to read all that stuff. So anyway, thank you. Well, Brother Christensen, or Jack, had to leave. I've known him for a long time. I was a 10-year-old boy when he was a high school quarterback, and I lived across the street from the school, and my brother is his age. And I said, you know, Jack, I had you up on this pedestal up here. I thought you're the best quarterback in the world. And then you just told all these people that your mom sacked you in the kitchen. Well, what's that about? Don't ever tell that story again. When it comes to finance, I feel like I'm a little out of place. Now, let me tell you about another time when I felt a little out of place. I was at Arlington National Cemetery, and for those of you that have been there before, It's usually a walking tour, but I was with my mother who was having health problems, so they let us drive through the cemetery. And I was driving with my family, and I took a left turn and immediately realized that, oh, there's a funeral going on. I've got to stop, back up, and get out of here. A car pulled right behind me. I couldn't back up, so I couldn't go forward. I couldn't back up. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw this Marine marching towards my car. And I thought, This isn't going to end well. And he comes up to my window. He raps on the window as hard as he could. And I unroll the window, and he said, "May I help you?" in his best Marine voice. And before I could say anything, my 5-year-old in the back seat, he said, "Yes, I would like a chocolate ice cream cone, please." So just as my son's going to make the best of an awkward situation, I'm going to talk about finances. You know, so we're going to come down a little bit from the spiritual high, maybe, that you're on, that Brother Christensen so generously helped you to get to that high, and talk about finances, and talk about money today. So as mentioned, I've managed money for retirees for 30 years. I worked with a lot of missionaries, a lot of mission presidents, a lot of people in missionary situations. So I think there's some valuable insights I can share with you today. I didn't have to use these glasses 30 years ago, but I do now. I think you all understand. I just want to be one of the first ones to tell you, too, how important it is that the work that you're going to do as senior missionaries. I've had three children go on missions, and everyone, as they've come back, has told me this, that the tremendous value or the impact that senior couples have had. Last year, I had my daughter come back from Missouri. She's in the Independence, Missouri mission. She was a visitor center missionary, so she spent a lot of time doing tours, Liberty Jail, and so forth. But she especially, this grew to love the senior missionaries and so appreciated all that they do. They still stay in touch. The senior missionaries kind of, you know, they're guardians of these girls. of these sisters, and they're still checking in with my daughter to see who she's dating. Recommended that she don't date this one guy that she met on the mission. So they're kind of looking out for her, and it's a wonderful thing. But what a blessing it is to be able to be a full-time representative of Jesus Christ in whatever capacity. And I look forward to someday serving a mission again myself. But now I want to talk about you for just a second. By all measurements, the baby boomer retiree, you and me, we're healthier, wealthier, happier, cleaner, kinder, safer, freer, more educated, more equal, more charitable, and more technologically advanced than any group of retirees ever to walk the face of this earth. In last general conference, you figure we have more travel opportunities, we have more income, there's just so many things that we can accomplish that previous generations never had that opportunity to accomplish. Last general conference, Elder Rasband instructed us that there are truly very few coincidences in life. President Monson has told us many times that indeed there are very few coincidences and that God is in the details of our lives. I don't believe it's a coincidence that this group of retirees, those of us right now, have so many opportunities and so much time and the resources that we do, because I don't think there is a coincidence. We have the responsibility to prepare the world for the second coming of the Savior. And there's just so much to be done. You know, redeeming the dead, perfecting the saints, and what we're talking about today is sharing the message of the restored gospel. So there are no coincidences. It happened this way because it was supposed to happen this way. So King Benjamin, as he was instructing his people to impart of their goods to the poor, he stated, "See that all these things are done in wisdom and order, for it's not requisite that a man should run faster than he has strength. And again, it is expedient that he should be diligent, that thereby he might win the prize. Therefore, all things must be done in order." Today, my goal is to share some ideas with you on how you can prepare for your missions in wisdom and order, how you can organize yourselves and your finances, not so that you can serve a mission, but that so you can serve a retirement full of missions, so that you can have the money to serve in whatever capacity the Lord would have you serve in his kingdom. But in order to serve, you need to retire, do you not? So let's talk about that. It's interesting to know that only 43% of all retirees have planned in advance how they'll generate retirement income. I find that shocking. I believe we spend more time planning our week-long vacation than we do our 30-year retirement. Okay, so it's important, though, as we plan our retirement, that the goal is not to have all the income in the world and all the money in the world, because if the truth be known, we could simply continue to work and delay our Social Security, delay taking our 401k money out. We just have a whole bunch of money, but if we wait till 75, we'd be rich, right? But the point is, the goal is not to have the most income, but the goal is to have an income sufficient to take care of our needs throughout our retirements. Now, you're all at different stages of mission preparedness. Some of you might have a call in your pocket right now. You're ready to go. Others of you might not be leaving for 5 or 10 years, but you just want to be prepared. So I've divided this presentation into two parts: things that you and we should all be doing right now to prepare for our missions, and then things that we should be doing that we'll need to do once we actually leave on a mission and retire and then go on a mission. So let's talk about the things we should be doing now. Now, with this group of people, I'm preaching to the choir, am I not? You're coming to this conference. But the truth is, as I go through things, I think, well, first and foremost, we need to follow the words of the prophets, ancient and our modern prophets. You know, we're promised so many things as far as our temporal or financial blessings go if we just follow the words of the prophets. We all know in Malachi, we're told if we pay tithing, the windows of heaven would be opened up unto us, and there shall not be room enough to receive them. And then we're asked to test the Lord. He says, "Prove me now herewith," or "Test me, try me." All of us that pay tithing, as you know, we're blessed because of this. Or how about King Benjamin? "And moreover, I would desire that you should consider on the blessed and happy state of those that keep the commandments of God. For behold, they're blessed in all things, both temporal and spiritual. And many, many more. And in fact, I've seen books that have written about all the temporal blessings that we can receive if we follow the words of the prophets. So what are the prophets telling us in our day? President Hinckley said, we've been counseled again and again concerning self-reliance, concerning debt, concerning thrift. So many of our people are heavily in debt for things that are not entirely necessary. I urge you as members of the church to get free of debt where possible and have a little laid aside against a rainy day. Indeed, as we plan with our retirees, debt is a burden and makes it very, very difficult for you to retire. So those of you that are preparing for retirement, I'd also say, you know what, you got to really work on knocking out that debt. But again, relinquishing debt must be done with wisdom and order, okay? Now, just because you heard some guy at BYU at a conference tell you to get out of debt doesn't mean you go home, liquidate all your investments in your 401k, incur huge tax penalties to get out of debt. Again, wisdom and order is the way to and diligence is how to get out of debt. President Hinckley also said we should have a little laid aside for a rainy day. Many of you are at the highest earning levels of your careers. Maybe you're at the end of your careers. I guess the question you need to ask yourself, do you really need all the income that you're pulling in right now? Or could you maybe up your contributions to your 401ks and your IRAs just a little bit? Again, save a little bit more to prepare for your retirement. When we talk about having a little set aside for a rainy day, I'm not going to get into the details of this, but I want you to understand that what is possible. You that are in the highest income levels you've ever been in your life can actually put away money now, get a tax deduction now, and have that money sit in an account, and then you could take that out and use that for your mission in the future. Okay, it's just using something called a donor-advised fund. So if you are in that situation, talk to your financial advisor about how a donor-advised fund works, or you can give us a call. We can give you more details on that. But I just want to let you know that's available, because I find most people don't understand that's possible. Second thing we can be doing now is organize ourselves. Organize yourselves. The early members of the church in this dispensation were instructed repeatedly to organize themselves. As we read the Doctrine and Covenants, we see these instructions pertain to missionary work, but also building temples and gathering the saints and so forth. But this mandate to organize ourselves can be applied to those preparing to serve full-time missions. Let me explain. When I think of organizing ourselves, we need to update our wills and our trusts. We need to get our estate planning done. This is something that can be done now. You don't have to wait till you have your mission call to do this. But many of you might say, well, I already have a trust. But if you read your trust, there's specific instructions on who will raise your children. It's probably outdated because your children are raising your grandchildren right now, right? And so things have changed. Things have changed. And so there should be more emphasis now, instead of who's going to raise your children, how about who's going to make medical decisions in your behalf if you can't make those decisions yourself? Okay, so I'd recommend you find an estate planning specialist. Okay, somebody that does wills and trusts. That's all they do. You don't want a bankruptcy attorney or a divorce attorney doing your estate planning, even though and you probably don't want to do it online either. You know, I know you could do it cheaper online, but you know, I guess you could build your own parachute too versus buying one from the factory. I think there's a certain things you probably ought to have a professional do. Power of attorney. This document isn't talked about very often, but I think it's particularly important for missionaries. The power of attorney is a document where you give another the authority to act in your behalf. So if somebody has your power of attorney, they can sell your property, they can liquidate your investments, they can basically do anything that you can do legally. Now, usually you'd only give this kind of authority to a spouse, but if you're out of the country, you may want to share this power to represent you with somebody here at home. Okay, why would you do this? Well, if they need to sell your car, if they need to buy or sell or manage your real estate, How about file taxes? Who's going to file your taxes for you while you're gone? Who's going to represent you in case there's a legal dispute or the IRS sends you a love letter and says you owe all this money? You know, who's going to manage these things for you? Okay. How about making change to your investments? How about wiring money to you in the mission field? So there is a reason to have a power of attorney. And so I'd recommend you talk to your attorney as you're getting your wills and trusts to make sure you get a power of attorney. Okay, now, for mission purposes, a power of attorney should be what they call a durable general power of attorney. This means that it's in effect the second that you sign it. Okay, the alternative to a general durable power of attorney is a power of attorney that has springing powers, or basically it does not come into effect until something causes it to spring into action, such as a disability or incapacity. Okay, and so a durable power of attorney. But I would let you know, please, you've got to be very careful of this power that you're giving to somebody else. It should be given to somebody, only to somebody who you completely trust. Okay, trust not just their integrity, but trust their judgment. Okay? So anyway, a discussion point for your attorney. Okay, last, things that can be done now. Get to know your retirement numbers. Determine your projected retirement income and consider ways to maximize this income. So what I'm talking about when I talk about getting to know your numbers, I'm talking about know your Social Security numbers, know your pension numbers, and figure out, again, ways to maximize those numbers. Let's talk first about Social Security. I just want to take a second. In Education Week, I have a whole hour to talk about Social Security, and I can't possibly tell people everything they need to know. So here I'm going to take 1 minute around Social Security and see how we do. Okay, so first of all, when it comes to Social Security, it's going to be there. And please, if you don't get anything else out of the Social Security section, is don't decide when you're going to take your Social Security based upon the rumors or hearsay that it's going out of business. You know, I've heard people say, I want to get as much out of the system as I possibly can, therefore I'm going to take it as early as I can. I think that's bad advice. Every year the Social Security has to present its records to Congress and that tells Congress how stable, how things are going with the Social Security system. The latest report states that there's no shortfall in the Social Security Trust Fund or the money that's coming into Social Security. Basically, they can pay all their obligations until the year 2034. After the year 2034, they'll only be able to pay 77% of their obligations if no changes are made. So right now, if some minor changes were made to the Social Security system, it would be healthy for years and years and years. The problem is we don't have any statesmen in Washington. So whenever a Republican or a Democrat suggests the minor adjustment to Social Security, it becomes a boondoggle for them, politically speaking. So both parties kind of shy away from this. So if you have any influence with any senators or congressmen, let them know, hey, there needs to be some adjustments to keep this system viable for a long time. But meanwhile, there's not even any projected shortfalls till the year 2034. So your Social Security benefit, how much you're going to receive will depend on two things. Okay, so number one, how much you earned over your working career. Okay, so it's based upon your 35 top earning years, and those your years are indexed for inflation. So there's a formula that's used to figure out what they call your primary insurance amount. Okay, so they take a look at all your years of service, come up with this primary insurance amount, and the primary insurance amount, or PIA, is the amount of benefit you will receive if you wait until your full retirement age to start your Social Security. Your full retirement age is going to be sometime during the year 66 or 67, and this is all depending upon the year of your birth. Okay, the second thing that determines your Social Security is the age at when you apply for your Social Security benefits. Now, if you wait till your full retirement age, you're going to get 100% of this primary insurance amount. Okay, you'll get 100% of the PIA. Okay, if you elect to take it earlier, you'll get less. If you elect to take it later than your full retirement age, you're going to get more. So here's just a summary how that works. You see your full retirement age at age 66, you'd get 100% of the benefit. Okay, now if you decide to take it at age 62, which you can, you're going to only end up getting 75% of your benefit. You know, and if you wait 63, it will be 80 something percent and so forth. So now if you wait past age, your full retirement age, you'll get more than your primary insurance amount. Okay, so it grows by 8% per year. After age 70, they don't give you any credits for waiting, so there's no reason to wait till after age 70. Okay, so you might want to consider that. Now, I'll tell you an example. Several missionaries we worked with where, you know, I have had this one come to mind. He's went to Africa on his mission. Okay, his wife had a pension. She has already taken her Social Security. He says, he's going through his list. He said, I guess I better go down Social Security and take that right now. And I said, no, wait a minute. You're going to Africa on your mission? Do you need this money from Social Security? No, it's just going to go to the bank. I said, well, why don't you wait? I mean, a guaranteed 8% per year for 2 years is a pretty darn good return, and you don't need the money anyway. He says, oh, okay, good, we'll do that. So anyway, if you go on a mission where you have other sources of revenue, you don't need the money, I'd suggest waiting, okay? Now, real quickly, spouses also have benefits. Now, you don't have to have worked at all to get a spousal benefit, okay? Spouses get 50% of the PIA of their husbands or wives, because Social Security is gender neutral, but they get 50% this by virtue of being the spouse of somebody who has a working history. Okay, so that's in addition to the husband's or the wife's normal check. So now Social Security, how much, you know, we used to get these Social Security statements every year in the mail. You probably noticed that they don't come anymore, or they're not coming very often. They only send them out to us every fifth year. So for example, when we're 50, 55, 60, 65 is when they send these statements out. But you can go online anytime. And as we do planning for people, it takes us just a minute to log on, find out exactly what the numbers are. So I promise you hop on, you can just Google Social Security, go to their website, plug in your information, and it's going to tell you exactly what your projected numbers are. Okay. And I'm not going to leave this up to, just go to socialsecurity.gov or just Google Social Security and you'll get there easily enough. Okay, pensions. Now, pension plans are disappearing. Some of you in the room might still have pensions, okay? Very few people to the workforce have pensions. So if you have a pension, feel very fortunate. But again, you have to take your pensions out with wisdom and order. We had a gentleman that came into our office just not too long ago, and he declared that his wife said, this is the year that they're going on a mission, right now. And looking over his pensions and so forth, I said, well, yeah, you can, but it's going to cost you 40% of your pension for the rest of your life if you go right now, versus if you wait for about 20 months, it won't. Okay, and again, I just want to point out wisdom and order. Okay, so let's take a look at these. Know your numbers. Another thing that you can be doing right now as far as knowing your numbers is to investigate senior mission possibilities. Now, this afternoon, the Lassens are going to be talking about all the different possibilities, so I'm not going to go there, except for I do want to let you know that this bulletin that comes out, I believe, every quarter from the church tells you exactly the cost of every mission in the church. It tells you all the different mission possibilities. And so I'm just suggesting maybe to take some time and look at that, figure out a mission that might fit within your budget. Everybody can serve a mission. I mean, you can serve a mission in Mongolia, or you can serve a mission in your own living room. Okay, so everybody can serve a full-time mission. Health insurance. There's three. Everybody needs health insurance during the mission. So there's three insurance policies to consider. First of all, if you're younger than 65, you're not on Medicare yet, you have to have an individual policy. Okay, or if you're over 65, you'll be on Medicare, and then you'll need a Medicare supplement. Okay. Now, the last thing is the thing I think I need to bring to your attention is if you serve an international mission, if you go outside the United States, you'll have to have international insurance, because Medicare and a lot of your private policies do not cover outside of the United States, okay? And your Medicare supplements don't either. The church has negotiated. They shop around. and they've negotiated a price this year. It's with Aetna that you can buy an international policy for $518 per couple or $259 per person. Okay, now all this information I'm giving you is within that bulletin, by the way. But we've talked to the church here's the deal. So you don't need to pay for Medicare or a Medicare supplement while you're on the international insurance. So you can take yourself off of it. But the problem is if you don't do it through the church's program, because there's you can't get back on it without penalties and so forth when you come back unless you do it through the missionary department. They have the proper government forms that you have to fill out and so forth in order to give you an exemption so you can get back on Medicare without any penalties. So I'm just telling you, don't try to do this on your own. If you get called to an international mission, be in contact with the missionary department and have them explain how this whole insurance thing works out, okay? Okay, well, let's shift gears right now. So far I've been talking about things you can be considering and doing before your mission. Now let's talk about, you've got your mission call, you're retiring. How do you manage things? It's interesting that less than half of your income during retirement is going to come from pensions and Social Security. That means the balance of your income has to come from your own investments. So I want to spend the rest of the time today just talking about how to manage that money to make it last throughout your entire retirement. Now, in the very short time that we have together, we have a half hour or so, there's no way in the world that I could tell you everything that you need to know about managing your money during retirement. I've written a book on the subject, and no, the book's not for sale. Okay, don't worry about that. But I want to give you a book to every couple. This is hot off the press a month or so ago. And so at lunchtime, if you're interested, you can come by and get a book. It's just my contribution to the missionary fund today. This is a copy of my book. So anyway, if you think it'd be helpful, but it talks about this whole managing money during retirement, I think you'll find the book very helpful. But at retirement time, you'll be faced with managing the largest sum of money that you've ever had in your life. Okay, but you also have all this large sum of money has to last for 3 decades, possibly. Okay, so how are you going to do this? Again, we're talking about wisdom and order. How are we going to go about managing this money? Now, as someone who's managed retirement money for 3 decades, I find that helping the new retiree organize their various investments they've collected over a working career into a stream of income is similar to organizing the old junk drawer in your house. Okay, it's not that the items in the junk drawer don't have value; they do. It's just the old junk drawer because, well, it's unorganized. Don't we all have a drawer like this where you keep the scissors, the stapler, the rubber bands? But organizing your junk drawer, so to speak, of investments is important. And you think about your own junk drawer of investments. Again, these have tremendous value. It's just unorganized. It's an unorganized mess. Think about, you have your 401k. You have the 401k at your previous employer that's still there. You have the Roth IRA that you put a little money into years ago and it's still sitting there. Or how about the whole life policy mom and dad bought for you when you were born? You still have that. How does that work into this whole thing? So the bottom line is you need to take all these pieces and turn them into an organized format so you can receive an inflation-protected income from these investments for the rest of your life. Now, for those of you that do it once in your life, it's a daunting task. For those of us that do it every day, it's just kind of a fun, it's kind of like putting together all the pieces of the puzzle. So this is what we do. I don't do anything else good, but I do that good. So, but in order to successfully organize and manage our investments during retirement, we must have a fundamental knowledge of compound interest. When asked to name the greatest invention in human history, Albert Einstein simply replied, well, it's compound interest. Okay, so I likewise am impressed by compound interest. To me, it's almost magical. So I want to show you how that works today. Now, as a reminder, compound interest is when you get interest on top of interest on top of interest on your investments. Okay, now, compound interest can work for you or it can work against you. You know, as J. Reuben Clark, who was warning the members of the church about debt, he said, he's, when he's speaking of debt, he warned that interest never sleeps, it never sickens, nor dies, it never goes to the hospital, it works on Sundays and holidays, and it never takes a vacation. And I got thinking about that. Yeah, never sleeps, never takes a vacation. I want that employee working for me. Okay, and so that's what compound interest does. So you weren't warned that there would be math today in this presentation, but there is one math test. So let me explain how it works. And I want to show you this because I think this is something really important that maybe you could show your kids and grandkids. They're going to think you're brilliant, and someday they're going to thank you for showing them this. So compound interest is, there's a simple formula. We call it the law of 72. So 72 divided by whatever return you get on your investments tells you how much time it takes your investment to double. So for example, 72 divided by 10 tells us that our money will double every 7.2 years. Okay? So let's go through an example of this. If you got a rate of return of 4.8%, so if we divide 72 by 4.8, it tells us our money will double every 15 years at a 4.8% return. Okay, so if we start out with $100,000, we know in 15 years we'd have $200,000. In another 15 years, it would double to $400,000. So at a 4.8% over 30 years, you'd turn $100,000 into $400,000. Okay, now using the same formula, we find that money getting a 9.6% return doubles every 7.5 years. Okay. Now, none of this information may seem that spectacular until you look at the results over a long period of time. As you can see from the chart, the results of compound interest are truly fascinating. A $100,000 investment getting 4.8% over 30 years only grossed $400,000, where compound interest at 9.6% return, or double the return, actually grows to $1.6 million. So thanks to compound interest, an investment that gets the 9.6 versus 4.8 return doesn't give you twice as much money. It gives you four times as much money. Okay, so show your kids that law of 72. You know, we get people in our office once in a while, and they wonder, wow, how can these people compute, these financial advisors compute these numbers in their head? Well, it all comes back to this law of 72. You know, people think we're genius when actually it's a real simple thing. But anyway, you can be the genius to your kids and grandkids, but show them how this thing works. So according to J.P. Morgan, and as you can see from this chart, the average investor would have performed better over the last 20 years by just picking an asset class, actually any asset class, and sticking with it than managing their own portfolio. So we only averaged as investors a 2.3 rate of return. At a 2.3 rate of return, our money doubles every 31 years. You know, we must do better than that. And I believe if you have a plan, you will do better. So we need a plan, okay? We need a plan to figure out how we're going to put this magic of compound interest to work in our own lives. And then how are we going to take the accumulations of my working career and turn them into a stream of income? Without a plan, we're driven by emotions. We're driven by headlines. And we're driven by fear and by greed. And none of these things are good when managing money. Okay, so therefore we need a plan. The other thing I want to alert you to is it's much harder managing money during retirement than it is accumulating money for retirement. You know, you think about it, the stock market goes down significantly and you have a 401k, you just keep pumping money into it. It's a good thing. You're buying more shares for less money. But retirement, when you're trying to distribute this over 30 years and the markets go down, you know, how do you manage that? So let's talk about a plan and how we're going to take care of that. Okay, an investment management plan needs several things. Number one, it needs to be goal specific. There's a big difference between a person who says, you know what, when I retire, I want a place on a cabin by the lake, versus the person who says, you know what, when I retire, I want a cabin by the lake, and I understand that I'm not going to retire for 20 years, and if I put $1,300 away every single month and get a 6% interest on that, it'll accumulate to $600,000, and I'll have enough money for a cabin. Okay, so there's the different types of people. In finance, dreams rarely come true, but plans usually do. Okay, and so have a plan. And our plan for retirement to figure out how much you'll need, when you'll need it, and then you need to figure out how to invest your money in order to accomplish those goals. So second thing our plan needs, we need to provide a distribution framework. You need to know how much you can take out of your 401ks and your IRAs during retirement. Again, this is the biggest amount of money that you'll ever have access to. You might feel quite rich. It might be millions of dollars. But again, you have to remember this has got to last a long, long time. So when it comes to distributing, the single question that has to be answered is how much should I withdraw from my investments? Okay, and this has to be figured out if you're going to have a sustainable retirement. Now, I've been around long enough to know there's different personalities. For some people, they look at this big pot of money and they say, you know what, I'm rich. I've been saving for my retirement all my life. I can spend whatever I want because, you know, I'm retired and here we go. And so there's the condos in St. George. There's bailing the kids out of every problem imaginable. And basically what happens, we see for some, they blow through their investment and savings during the first 10 years of 30-year retirement. Okay? Now, I would say on the other extreme, there's those who don't spend any money at all. They understand 30 years is a long, long time, and they're scared to spend any money on this practical things, you know, flying to a neighboring state to visit the grandkids, those kind of things. They just don't do it because they're scared of spending any money. So you have to figure out a happy medium there, you know, and to get the most out of your retirement, you have to kind of figure out, well, how much can I pull out? Experts recommend that retirees should limit their withdrawals to about 4% per year. Okay. Now I've seen, you know, because we read all the journals, I've seen some people say, no, that's too generous. I've seen other people say, no, you can actually take out more. But I feel comfortable with that 4% number. But according to the Employee Benefit Research Institute that tracks such things, the average retiree pulls about 15% per year out of their funds. This is simply not sustainable. They're going to run out of money. Okay, so a plan will help you have the discipline to take out the appropriate amount of money throughout retirement. Number three, you need to recognize and manage risk. Okay, so the question is, what is risk? Well, risk is the potential loss of purchasing power. That's what risk is. Now, every investment has risk. When we look at it this way, there's just different kinds of risks. Sometimes purchasing power is lost very gradually, as in the case of inflation. Sometimes purchasing power is lost all at once when a business goes bankrupt or the stock market plummets. But I believe investors fail to recognize the risks in their own situation. And so let me share you an example where I personally fail to recognize risk. I am a shark phobic. Okay, So I can't think of anything more frightening than being attacked by a shark. And my fear is shared by millions. In fact, I'd make a recommendation. Don't ever watch Shark Week during your Hawaiian vacation. Okay, it's a bad thing. So, but I've done my research on the frequency of shark attacks and surprisingly discovered that out of the more than 7 billion people that live on this planet, only 10 people per year die from a shark attack. Only 10. Okay, so in doing further research, I'm more likely to be killed by an asteroid, or I'm 3,000 times more likely to be killed by a hippopotamus. Okay, so I think my chances are pretty darn good that I'm not going to get killed. I'm not going to die from a shark attack anytime soon. But now, on the other hand, there's 66,000 deaths per year can be attributed to skin cancer. So when you do the math, I'm 6,600 times more likely to die of skin cancer than I am from a shark attack. Therefore, as far as risk goes, it appears that when I go to the beach, my fellow shark phobics and I are worrying about the wrong kind of risk. It's not the dramatic sudden shark attack that's going to kill us. It's probably just being exposed to the sun that's going to do us in, comparatively. So it is with investments. The dramatic but temporary declines in the stock market, though scary, do not do near as much damage as the erosive effects of inflation day by day. Okay, so that's why it's important to understand all the risks in your own situation and prepare for those risks. When I talk about inflation, I just want to help you understand inflation is where our money's losing its purchasing power day by day, and sometimes it's so gradual we don't understand what it's doing to us. Over the years, the inflation rate's been about 3%. Okay, so at a 3% inflation rate in 30 years, you'll need to have $2.45 to equal the same purchasing power that $1 has today. That means that we'll be paying $8.50 for a gallon of milk. It'll cost about $120 to fill your gas tank. It'll cost $18 for a combo meal at McDonald's, okay? And about $100,000 for a new average quality mid-sized car. Okay, so an additional concern with inflation is that of healthcare. Healthcare-related expenses increase by about double the average inflation rate, and the retirees spend more on healthcare-related things than any other item. So it's imperative that retirees are mindful of inflation as they invest and plan for the future. Now, inflation risk is neutralized by investing in asset classes whose investment returns exceed the inflation rate. We beat inflation by investing into stock-related investments. Sometimes we call those equities. Okay, now certainly not all your retirement funds should be invested in stocks and equities, but some has to be there to keep up with inflation. Now, the price the investor pays for superior inflation-beating returns through investing in equities is volatility. Okay, stocks have been volatile. They will always be volatile. And so how do we manage this thing? When we talk about volatility, I have the bears and the bulls since World War II. You see on the left-hand side, we have all the bad markets, the bear markets, the worst markets. Okay, and you see there's a lot of giant drops. It's kind of scary. On the right-hand side, however, we know that bears are always followed by bulls. So bad, good markets follow the bad markets. Can you think of times in your life? I think I started my career in 1987. That was Black Monday. The stock market dropped 30% in one day. That would be equivalent to about a 7,500 drop in the Dow Industrial Average today, in one day. And I remember, and I was brand new to the business back then, and watching all the old brokers and thinking, maybe I don't want to do this. Maybe I'll do something else. But then we had the 90s, where the stock market was up 400% during that decade. Then we had the dot-com bubble burst in 2000. You all remember that. People were throwing money at companies that have never made money. But because it has something to do with technology, we all thought that was the place to be. And then we had the tragic events of 9/11 after that. Markets start going up again, doing well. And then we had the financial crisis of 08 and 09, which is still fresh in all of our minds. Okay, but over a long period of time, through all the ups and downs, from 1945 till now, the stock markets got about 11% return. Okay, so yeah, just have to understand there's going to be volatility when we're talking about stocks. So the question is, how does one manage this unpredictable bipolar business partner we call the stock market? Well, let me answer that question through analyzing another volatile yet valuable resource, that of the Colorado River. Okay, the headwaters of the Colorado River start high in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado and Wyoming, and the annual runoff from the melting snowpack provides the water that flows into this valuable resource. The water provided by the Colorado River is a life-saving supply that makes it possible for its 41 million thirsty users downstream to survive in the desert Southwest. So the cities of Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Phoenix, San Diego would have never been made cities without the Colorado River. Okay, so it's a very important resource. So prior to being tamed, the Colorado River was an erratic and undependable source of water with extremes like no other river that I can even think of. The average flow of its water on an annual basis ran about 100,000 cubic feet per second during the spring of each year and decreased to a mere 2,500 cubic feet per second during the winter months. Again, this was the average flow. Let's take a look at the extremes. Okay, so the extremes are mind-blowing. In 1884, the river was measured to have peaked out at a whopping 384,000 cubic feet per second. Cities along the river were wiped out that year. Okay, and the smallest flow in recorded history is in 1935 when it eked out just 422 cubic feet per second. So the question is, how could such a volatile resource be managed? Well, over time, 29 dams were built on the various rivers that feed the Colorado, as well as major dams were built on the Colorado River itself. Okay, the reservoirs created by these dams have the capacity to store about four times the average flow of the Colorado, the average annual flow of the Colorado River. So this vast system of dams controls flooding concerns, as well as stores water for the inevitable drought years and even drought decades that are so common in the desert Southwest. So like the Colorado River, the stock market is a valuable resource, but it's also very volatile. The best year stocks have ever had, large stocks have ever had, was 54%. The worst year was negative 43. So how do we manage this thing? Well, the Colorado River has a series of dams that controls the level and flow of the river. So you might be asking, so where are the dams with the stock market, with equities? Well, we don't need any dams with that. How we control the erratic flow of the stock market and equities is through time. There's no fancy products that need to be created. There's no expensive solutions. We just have to understand that over time, it all works out. Okay, we can't get caught up into this. And I think this is especially important for missionaries. As you're out on your mission, you have to have part of your money in equities. You can't be trying to micromanage this and trying to time this. This is a useless exercise. Just understand that over time, it works out. So since 1926, if you would have bought stocks each month and sold those stocks at the end of every month, you would have made money 62% of the time. Therefore, it means you would have lost money more than a third of the time. Okay, now, if you would have bought stocks on the first day of each year and sold it on the last day of each year since 1926, you would have made money 73% of the time, and that means you would have lost money 27% of the time. If you would have bought stocks on the first day of each year and waited for 5 years and then sold your stocks, you would have made money 86% of the time, therefore lost 14% of the time. How about 10 years? If you would have bought stocks on the first day of each year and sold every year, you would have sold every in 10 years, you would have made money 95% of the time and lost money 5%. And then how about 15 years? Well, there's never been a period of time in 15 years ever in the history of the United States where you would have not made money in equities. Okay? So you take a look at this trend. The longer you... Again, time is our friend. The longer you have money invested, the better your chances are. Okay, and then last, provide an investment framework. So when it comes to our investments, we need to know what we own, why we own it, and when will these funds be needed to provide future income. A properly structured investment plan matches your current investments, your current investment strategy with your future income needs. Again, things must be done in wisdom and order. I particularly like this quote from President Uchtdorf as we apply it towards investing. He says, sometimes the truth may seem just too straightforward, too plain, and too simple for us to fully appreciate its great value. So we set aside what we have experienced and know to be true in pursuit of more mysterious or complicated information. Hopefully we will learn that when we chase after shadows, we are pursuing matters that have little substance and value. I think that's particularly appropriate for investments. Let me explain some of the investment myths, maybe some of the shadows that we chase after. I think it's particularly important again for missionaries to recognize these, so we don't worry about this stuff while we're on our missions. First of all, market timing. It's getting in the market and getting out of the market at the right time. Okay. Report after report, white paper after white paper, thesis after thesis tells us that market timing can't be done. But yet my industry, the investment industry, still promotes the idea that the value added of the industry is, well, we know when to get in, when to get out. But if we're honest with ourselves, you know what? Nobody in our industry knows how to do this. And guess what? You don't either. Okay, so we can stop worrying about trying to get in, trying to get out, following the current events and trying to mix and match this. And the reason, and I take a look at the mutual fund industry. There's 15,000 mutual funds. How many of them can beat the market index over 5 and 10 year periods of time? Well, like none, very few. Okay, and so if they can't do it with the best and brightest financial people in the world, chances are you can't do it on your own either. So I'd be careful with that one. How about superior investment selection? Some people think they're going to get rich by beating the market, by finding this the hidden mutual fund or the hidden stock. And this is also very, very difficult to do. And I see a lot of people spending a lot of time trying to do this. And again, the academic world refutes the idea that this can be done. Be careful with that one. This next one might come as a surprise to you, that past performance, when we use past performance as an indicator of future performance of a specific investment, that doesn't work. And there's no statistical evidence at all that shows that whatever an investment has done in the past will mean it will do anything like that in the future. None. You know, I remember as a young advisor studying all the mutual funds and trying to figure out where to take my clients to. And I figured if I studied all these things, then you know what, they're going to be rich. It'll be better off. Now I recognize that I would have done just as well, you know, perfecting my golf swing or cleaning my garage than trying to study the past performance, because it really has no predictive value whatsoever. So, and again, I tell you these things because I think you need to develop a plan that's not predicated upon the success of these things, because these things just don't work. And especially as missionaries, you can't get caught up into looking at this stuff and worrying about this stuff. You need to have a plan before you go on a mission. You know, set it and forget it, basically. If you have a plan, you can do that. In fact, I kind of preach to my missionary, the people that are going on mission, say, don't worry about this, we'll take care of it. And so I went and picked up my daughter in Missouri on her mission last year. One of my clients happened to be called to her mission. And I thought, well, certainly they'll want to have an update as long as I'm here with them. And I said, and this is a person who's very, you know, he looks at the statements every day. And so I said, so you want an update while you're here? He said, no. So that's good. Well, I trained you well then. That's good. So as far as a plan goes, let me just tell you in conclusion here. What we have to do is we have to figure out, again, match our current investments with our future income needs. And as a reminder, when we take a look at risk and time, owning equities, the risk of owning equities goes down the longer we have them. Okay? Now, and the risk of inflation goes up the longer the time that we have. All right? And so how are we going to put together a plan, or we need to put together a plan that considers these things? So I'm going to show you just a real short movie, and it's a little bit choppy because I try to get all the promotional stuff out of it. It's from my website. The movie's only last 1 minute, so don't despair, okay? But I just want to show you this. It's to kind of give you an idea what a plan should look like, okay? And again, it's in the book that you can just pick up for free at lunchtime, okay? So,
patience, you made it to retirement. Retirement's different now than what it used to be. Like it or not, employer-sponsored pension plans that provided past generations a steady paycheck throughout retirement have been replaced by 401ks and IRAs. Now you're responsible to create your own stream of retirement income. In order to successfully manage your investments, there are a few obstacles to be aware of. Longevity. As life expectancies continue to rise, you need to plan on creating a stream of income that will last for 30 years. Inflation. Assuming only a 3% inflation rate, your dollar today will have just 41 cents of purchasing power in 30 years. Market volatility. The stock market has always had its ups and downs. Expect this to continue. You might be asking yourself, how do I invest to keep up with inflation? How much should I withdraw annually? How do I keep from making mistakes during volatile markets? It sounds like you need a plan. Let me explain how it works. Using a conservative, goal-based approach to investing, we separate the money you will use to provide a stream of income into different accounts. Each account is dedicated to providing income for a 5-year segment of retirement. Therefore, each of those segments has different objectives. Segment 1 provides income for the first 5 years, so safety of principal is its objective. This should not be subject to market volatility, so we use conservative investments. Segment 2 grows for 5 years and then provides income for year 6 through 10, and so on. Keeping up with inflation becomes increasingly more important in the latter segments, so we use stocks and other inflation-beating investments that can meet this goal. As each segment meets its target, we lock in our gains by moving aggressive investments into more conservative ones. This provides a steady stream of income for future years.
Okay. So, anyway, as you can see, this goal-based plan, the retiree's short-term income needs are taken care of. Their short-term income needs are not subject to the stock market, but meanwhile, the long-term, they have some inflation protection being in equities. So, again, if you want more details on this, it's all in the book. But I just want to kind of show you what a plan is. A plan is not guessing when to be in and when to be out of the markets and so forth. So, but in conclusion, and I feel whenever I talk about money and mix it with religious things, I feel a little squirrely about this. But I truly and sincerely want to let you know that I believe that the Lord indeed takes care of His missionaries. And the only thing that's permanent about our money is our stewardship. When you think about it, not too long ago, all the money you have, all the resources you have, belong to somebody else. Not too many years from now, all the resources that you currently manage will also belong to somebody else. Okay, the only thing that's permanent about our money is our stewardship, and our having to account for how we managed our money and how we used our money during our lifetimes. And I've seen firsthand the great blessings that the missionaries receive, and there's financial blessings as long as, again, they plan well, okay, through wisdom and order. And so, anyway, I just want to let you know, I've been talking about finances all day long, but I just want to bear you my testimony that, indeed, this is the work of God. As we go about doing His work, He'll take care of us. He's promised us that. And I believe that to be true, and I've seen that to be true. And I say these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.